cliffcentral.com.
All right, listen, everybody's excited. It's the beginning of a new year, and Justice Malala is here with his triumphant return to the burning platform. How are you, Justice?
I'm very good. How are you guys?
We're good. The burning platform, as always, brought to you by Nando's, and we've got to thank them for coming back for another year of unbelievable analysis. The discussion around all the topics, the situations, the political conundrums we find ourselves in. There's no better place than here every Thursday to discuss them with the guy who knows what's going on, Justice Malala.
You know, Steve Hofmeyer is willing to perform.
He's willing to perform, and he's willing to go, but he's not prepared to pay for his own ticket, so he's crowdfunding.
But he's willing.
Yeah.
He's ready and willing
well,
to
Well, Donald's
perform.
Got very few choices at the moment, so he might have to choose Steve after all.
I know.
All right, well, listen, there are things people are desperate to know about. We've had a break with the burning platform, so we've got to catch up on quite a lot. Let's start with the ANC. I'm sorry, I almost threw up there a little bit because I'm not sure what's going on in the ANC. What is happening in the ANC?
You're not the only one who doesn't know. Ask any ANC member if they are allowed to speak about who succeeds President Zuma when he finally steps down after 10 years at the helm at the end of this year. And they will say, no. Didn't you hear what the leadership said on January 8th? They said, don't talk about it. So
No.
Exactly. So, you know, we all might be ANC members. We all might think, wow, Ben is the best thing since sliced bread. And, you know, it's time for him to become leader of the ANC. Well, whatever qualities he might have, the ANC said, don't talk about it. Now, we've been talking about it for the past 3 years, okay? And the ANC says, don't talk about it now. But the president of the ANC, President Jacob Zuma of the country, goes to KwaZulu-Natal and talks about it. He goes on, you know, there's something called FM. Frequency modulation.
Yes, it's an old old system they used to use for communicating with
yes,
people.
Yes, they're turning it off.
You crank it up with a diesel engine in it.
Yes. They're turning it off in the Scandinavian countries now. Mm. It's you know, before long it will be like the typewriter. Anyway, so he goes on FM on the SABC, three of the biggest stations, Ukozi and Mutsuding and Lesedi, I think. And he says, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, wow, she's fantastic. She's, you know, she's ready to go on and do this thing. And if she says yes to it, we as the Zuma family, we don't have a problem. No problem.
That's convenient.
So here's the key thing for me. This year will be exactly like that, because on January 8th, Jacob Zuma, the NEC, stood up and said, don't talk about this. The night before the statement was issued, the Women's League said, no, we are ready. A woman should lead.
No.
But a particular woman should lead, and that woman is Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma.
So how can you with one breath say, don't talk about succession, but the president himself, who's the main person, I suppose, that people who don't want you to talk about succession is trying to protect, and yet he's going out there talking about succession because he's got a dog in this fight.
So yesterday there was a curious statement from the National Working Committee of the ANC. The National Working Committee says, you know what? We've said to you guys, stop talking about it. And we are saying again, stop. Now, these are the same people who were ignored by Bathabile Dlamini and the ANC Women's League. Are they going to do anything about it? Are they going to say anything to the president about what he said? Are they going to say anything about the fact that Baleka Mbete, the national chairperson of the ANC, has gone to the Sunday Times and said pretty much the same thing? And I'm ready, I'm willing, choose me. President Zuma certainly has a dog in the race, and you can see which drum he's beating, and he's beating harder and harder to get going. So basically, what's happening in the ANC is that this year you might want to talk. I know Ben's favorite subject, land expropriation. Let's take back the land, all that. Now, that's a policy issue. There are many other policies that, should be discussed. You know, economic growth, You won't get a word in edgewise in the ANC on policy this year because everyone's going to be talking about, well, is it Mabale who's going to be president? She's coming along and, oh, no, no, it's Ben. Ben is coming in. It's going to be fantastic. The year has started and it started very badly. It means that for a year, at least, we won't be talking about the fact that the economy is not growing. Unemployment is getting worse. And has the NDP been implemented? Policy is not at the heart of this thing.
Last week, we spoke to Adrian Basson, who wrote an interesting article in News 24 about the challenges Nkosi Sanatlamini Zuma will face if she decides to run, which she's clearly decided to run, and she's you know, the favorite for the moment. But there are a lot of complications around her that still need to be figured out. There are dance steps that will be taken in order to make it possible for her to, with any credibility, take office if she is to be the next ANC president. Some of this plays into Cyril's hands, whose game is still not clear.
His game is still not very clear. It seems as if his engine, hopefully it's not a cougar, but his engine has started a little bit and there's some movement. He's making interesting sounds. I thought it was very interesting that he went to the Eastern Cape finally last weekend and spoke at the January 8 rally there. But it's still, you know, he's still walking very softly. I think he still thinks that President Zuma will at some point say, ah, well, you know, maybe my deputy should be the man. But that is never going to happen.
No.
President Zuma, I find it interesting that a lot of people are reporting President Zuma saying it's time for a woman to lead the ANC as something new. He said this way back in May 2014. In fact, he called a press conference all by himself just before the May 14 election, and rambled for about an hour. And in that hour, he managed to say, you know what, it's time for a woman to lead the ANC. So it's nothing new, and I think Cyril Ramaphosa has been waiting, thinking this guy will change his mind. It's not going to happen.
But
so,
for a while, it seemed that the president might be more in favor of Baleka. There was a time.
I think,
but she fell out of favor, and now perhaps she's a threat to his eventual succession plan.
Yeah, I think, you know, politics. You know, Gareth, let's call a spade here. The truth of the matter is that President Zuma doesn't personally, in my view, think that Nkosi Sanatlamini Zuma will be a fantastic leader for South Africa.
And he doesn't care about women being empowered.
Zuma was a gender activist of any worth, he would have stood up on many, many other issues of gender equity, gender empowerment, gender women advancement than he has in his tenure as president of the ANC, as deputy president of the ANC before that and so forth. So I don't think this is really about that. I think if you look at what men have done to this country, there is a compelling case for a woman to lead. But is that what is driving the president? The president wants to stay out of jail. The president wants a proxy who will ensure that that he doesn't go to jail, doesn't face those 783 counts of fraud, corruption, and racketeering. So the first, just to touch on your question about what Adrian had to say, I haven't seen his article. I wasn't around last week. But one of the key things to consider would be, is she a proxy for the president? If she is a proxy for the president, how does she decouple herself from what has clearly become a rotten administration that is, as we saw in the State of Capture report, run from Saxon-Wold with essentially cabinet members coached to say and do certain things that advance the enrichment of the Zuma family and the Gupta family.
And of course, this is a woman who has got her own level of credibility. A woman who is regarded quite highly, not just on this continent, but before when she was Minister of International Relations in South Africa, even Minister of Health before that. Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma is of the Thabo Mbeki School of Government too. And I don't think that she's the kind of person who wants to put her entire future on the line in order to receive the endorsement of a man who might have been her husband once, but who certainly is slipping in terms of his own credibility day by day.
I don't think she wants that. And I think that it would be, in fact, it is a great sadness that the main proponent of this presidency would be the one person who she, in 2007, did her best to
keep out of power.
And that is why she stood with Thabo Mbeki when he was trying for a third term.
And resigned.
As ANC president, and she stood with him against Jacob Zuma and Kgalema Motlanthe. So yes, she's got a lot of positives. I always make the example about the fact that, 15, 16 years ago, we'd have been in this studio, and those who smoke, and there would have been several in the room.
They would have been smoking right here.
I suspect that my kids are going to grow up not knowing what an ashtray is.
Lucky them.
And that's part of the work that she did that's so fantastic about her tenure at Health. But
Justice, it would be, and to just bring up the gender thing one more time, because people are going to make this one of the important parts of the succession battle, however it ends up going. Because identity politics, whether we like them or not, they're there. And for some people, simplified and stupid as some of these arguments may be, it matters to some people. Now, is there a more patronizing situation than for a woman to be a proxy for a man and for that man to be crowing about how this woman is bringing some kind of gender equity into the world?
I think
it's humiliating.
I think what Thuli Madonsela said at the Cape Town Press Club on Monday, I think it was, or Tuesday, was quite powerful. She said, a proxy is bad enough, but a woman president is absolutely the right thing, the right way to go. But if it's a proxy, if it's someone who is being used, and it's a terrible thing to actually sit and have a discussion where a competent, capable leader is reduced to being a proxy. And I think that's part of the work that the Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma campaign has to do, to walk away as far as possible from being seen as a proxy for this president and his administration.
Yeah.
Because that undermines the very incredible work that Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma has done in the past. And yet, that's hard politics. The reason why we all say Jacob Zuma is not to be underestimated is because he reads the terrain and says, this is how I get to power. So, if that is what Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma is doing, saying this is how I get to power, the only way I can get to power is to harness the support that President Zuma still has in the ANC. And then when I get there, I'll do my own thing.
Well, can you, if you inherit the trappings of the Premier League?
This is the thing, because on day one, there'll be a knock on the door and it will be, hey, Mabale, you remember how you got here?
My name is Supra.
My name is Ace. I need something.
Need a little bit. It don't be a problem, but just a little word in there. And that is where the big question mark will be. And this question mark will get bigger and bigger as, in my view, she'll remain the front runner in this race for a while. Things may change, but as it stands right now, she's the front runner, and the credibility questions will continue to be raised over her.
I know you have an agenda of other things to talk about, but I just want to read you something that I saw on what is this site again? biznews.com yesterday. It is impossible nowadays to get around to everything, especially in a place like Davos, where an overabundance of brain food is on offer. And this is by Alec Hogg, by the way.
Mr. Hogg should visit this studio.
Yeah, he should.
There's
so
much brain food going on.
We'll get into the nuts and bolts when time permits, but from a South African perspective, the most important takeaway for him from Davos was the way that it shattered some widely held myths. The index, now in its 17th year, scores trustworthiness. This is the what they call the Edelman survey, right? It's now in its 17th year. It scores trustworthiness on an index over 59, neutral from 50 to 59, distrust anywhere below 50. The survey is further divided into the informed public and then the mass population. South Africa is once again locked inside the distrusters, but the surprise is that the informed public scored just below the benchmark, 49, while the mass population gave their leaders a score of just 41. This dichotomy suggests that President Jacob Zuma's supposed trump card of owning the rural vote is a myth. As a pal who works at the bottom end of the income pyramid once quipped, just because they're poor, don't make the mistake that they're stupid. It's an interesting point to make because a lot of people just, you know, throw the towel in with the rural masses of this country. And they say, well, these people are just and will just, and we make assumptions, which is, again, a very patronizing thing to do, on behalf of the masses of rural poor in South Africa, that they aren't informed or that they choose very little. They have their own agency knocked out of them, you know, early on in the race, and that these people are not able to make astute political observations and decisions for themselves. A lot of them have opted out of the system altogether, so disillusioned are they with it. But this does point to the fact that there may be also swathes of very, very unhappy people in the rural poor who may decide actually to mount an offensive of their own at some point. And when that happens, it'll be very obvious that they've done it because we will see the results all over.
I think that's it's a very powerful point. You know, one of the results of the local government elections that we haven't interrogated enough is the fact, and there were many memes about this, Dan. There were pictures of President Zuma going to vote on August 3 last year. And there was a meme that I particularly enjoyed that said, they stand with you in the queue, but when they go inside, they vote for the IFP, because the IFP won the Nkandla, the Great Nkandla district municipality. And I think that is rural KwaZulu-Natal. That is a place where President Zuma he goes there every Christmas. He goes and, he says he wants to be mayor of that same municipality one day when he retires from the presidency, or when he steps down rather from the presidency. So one of the interesting facets of that debate about all the rural masses are still with the ANC. Well, first of all, if you look at what's going on now, the metros are in the urban vote is moving away from the ANC, still with the ANC at 40% and so forth, but certainly moved away from a majority. And we're looking at a situation now where I think we'll continue to see that shift in the rural vote. I think that the 2019 election will not be the walkover that so many people have always thought the ANC would enjoy. I find it interesting that it's people like Senzo Mkhunu, the former leader of the ANC in KZN, the former premier of KZN until just last year, who are saying, and he said it this week, that, you know what? We are on a hiding to nothing here. Now, the forces in KwaZulu-Natal, most populous province, rural, all that, because the IFP is in play. Other opposition parties, the DA has become very active there.
And let's not forget that NFP, who raised their heads two elections ago, and despite losing their leader for a time and then regaining her and then changing again.
Yeah.
This party managed to command some part of the vote out of sheer frustration among ANC voters.
Exactly.
So it's ripe for a change.
It's ripe for a change. And so the ANC, and I think the ANC's leaders, need to get a wake up about that. You know,
yeah, it's almost like the ANC just takes the rural poor and they put them in their back pocket and they go, well, that's a guarantee.
Yeah.
That one we've got in the bag. Well, don't worry about them.
I think it would be interesting. You know, if I had to do a little exercise and someone was to say, Justice, do the ANC NEC a favor.
Mm-hmm.
I would really dearly love to go and say to the ANC when it goes to its next NEC at St. George's in Irene in Pretoria, I would say, guys, let's get in a bus and let's go and meet the ANC's leaders in Tshwane, where the ANC has lost the municipality. Because ANC leaders don't realize what losing a municipality means. And I think national ANC leaders don't get it. If you go to Tshwane, where I come from, so I have lots of friends who were leaders in the ANC, who are still leaders in the ANC, but they are no longer leaders in the administration, in the government of Tshwane.
So they're not being paid out of that person anymore.
So they're not being paid. So that's the first thing. At the personal level, there are many, many people who are being paid, and they don't get paid no more. So your core, your leaders are now who are driving big cars, they can't keep up with the payments on the Porsche Cayenne. And suddenly they are walking or they are downgrading. Well,
they've moved back in with their parents in the township.
It is a tsunami going through the ANC in Tshwane. There are people who, and you might say it's corrupt, it's whatever, but there were people who were plugged into that system getting work, whether it's construction or whatever and so forth, who are no longer getting the work. There were people who were in the civil service because they were deployees. Mm-hmm. Well, people are asking, thanks for being deployed, but were you really the right person for this job? And some of them were not. Some were, and I'd say many of them have survived the cuts that are going on, but some were not. There is, my view is that the ANC will not see Tshwane again in 5 years when we go to vote, because the largesse, the state resources, the municipal resources that it could use to say, look what we've done just before an election, it would tar the roads in my mother's village or whatever. It can't do that anymore. And so there is a fundamental problem here for the ANC and its ostrich mentality. And it's this. I don't think ANC leaders realize what they stand to lose, but they will lose it increasingly, bit by bit, if they don't change their ways. And Tshwane is a beautiful example, and I'm sure it's happening in other parts of the country. I'm not plugged in enough into what happened with the ANC in Johannesburg. But certainly the same is happening.
We had Park Stouin last week, and he's, you know, he's still very much involved in the local government, and he's obviously still a councillor in Johannesburg.
Salga,
you can tell there's a bit of a change in temperature.
I'm sure there is, and I'm sure people like him,
yes,
are trading with a little bit more humility. And I think part of the Gauteng ANC being so keen for President Zuma to show some humility about what happened on August 3, it comes from exactly that. They realize that we are in trouble here. If you think about what's happening in the Ekurhuleni municipality and the fact that the AIC is saying, what's in this coalition for me with the ANC? And I want to walk out. This could mean that another metro could start shifting to a different party.
Which ultimately means, I mean, if Ekurhuleni falls, then really the province is gone.
Then the province is gone.
And if the provincial and the municipal governments in Gauteng, your most important province, because let's face it, this is where the action is, that's a big blow.
You're painting a very, very different picture for 2019. And you have to start painting scenarios that say, what kind of administration do we have in 2024 for South Africa? because the rural vote that you speak about is not uninformed, is not unaware of what's going on. And so all these shenanigans around leadership and manipulating leadership and your Supra Mahoma Pelo or Didi Mabuza jumping up and down, trying to gerrymander their score and so forth. At the end of the day, the consequence for the ANC is huge. And the ANC, you know, the game is really still with the ANC for now, in my view. But that game is dissipating. And I think consequences around the corner.
All right. Now, you wanted to address a couple of other things. You said Eskom is boring, but we need to talk about it.
Yes. Now,
well, yeah, there are a lot of people who are going to feel the direct repercussions of municipal bills not being paid.
But I want to talk. So Eskom has been going on and on, and the National Treasury has been going on and on, saying there are municipalities. So this is how it works. You sit in your house and you say, I've got my electricity bill, and you pay the city of Joburg.
Right.
Now, there are many municipalities in the northwest, in Mpumalanga, small little municipalities, some a little bit bigger. The municipality that covers Hartbeespoort Dam, where many of our listeners are sitting and listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that municipality, the residents, the ratepayer pays for their electricity. But when the money gets to the municipal manager, Mabale, she says, no, we want to use the money for this and so forth. She doesn't take the money and pay Eskom.
Mm-hmm.
Eskom has been saying to the municipality, please pay. No, please pay. There are 59 of these municipalities. All of them in all this, the Free State, Mpumalanga, Northwest. So finally, you know, and so, you know, government goes and says, please, guys, pay. And they say, oh, we'll pay. But then they default. In 2014, National Treasury did a study and it said, these are the bad guys. They need to pay. They said, no, we'll pay, we'll pay, we'll pay. Can we have a payment plan? And they sign the payment plan and it's like, oh, we are good and so forth. And then they don't pay. So be careful about what's going on here. So the ratepayer is paying for the electricity. The municipality is not paying Eskom.
Huh.
They're taking the money, buying the mayor a big car, for example.
Right.
Or going on trips to Swaziland to learn about whatever or whatever. But there is a lot done by the politicians. So you have a weird thing here. Eskom is at the top. It keeps on supplying electricity. At the bottom is the ratepayer, keeps on paying. The middleman, the politician, the local municipality just hubs the money and doesn't pay Eskom. So Eskom keeps on saying, please pay. Government, treasury, private garden says, guys, please pay. And they just keep on taking the money and buying the mayor a 1.5 million rand car. By the way, did you see that fantastic thing where a mayor, I can't remember where, said yesterday, don't buy me that 1.5 million rand car. I don't need it. Let's use the money for the people of this municipality.
Please, we've got to find out who this is to give them credit. It's a rare thing.
It shouldn't be a rare thing, but that's how rare this thing is. So in these 59 municipalities, they don't do that. They're not like her. They're like, no, buy me a big, not a 1 million rand car, not a 500,000 rand SUV. Buy me a 1.5 million rand car. That's the problem. So what Eskom is now doing is saying, we've had enough. So we can't cut off Mabale, we're going to cut off the entire city because the entire municipality owes us cash. So the Eskom has started on Monday saying this municipality, we're going to start cutting off electricity because you haven't paid. 29 of those 59 municipalities have run off to Eskom and said, we've got a little bit of money, we'll pay, and then let's sign a payment plan.
Right.
I think it's fantastic what Eskom is doing.
Really?
I think it's great. Finally, someone is drawing the line in the sand and saying, you can't go on like this.
Yes.
However, the problem is that the guy who gets punished is Ben sitting in Artebiasburdam, running his small business,
yeah,
and he doesn't have electricity anymore because the politicians have not taken his money, which he pays faithfully, to Eskom.
Mm.
But not many people, when Eskom is doing the cutoffs, are going to realize that it's not Eskom's fault and it's not their fault. It's their local politician's fault because he's been taking their money and not giving it to Eskom.
So you've got to get rid of these politicians.
So the big issue here is getting people in all those municipalities which will be cut off to realize who the real culprit is. And the real culprit is your... If you get cut, if all of Joburg gets cut off because Soweto, large parts of Soweto haven't been paying, and if Joburg cuts off, well, in this case, it would be the mayor of Joburg has not been paying Eskom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, if we have protests in those municipalities, people saying, I pay for my electricity and I don't have it, I think it's important to point out who is responsible for that. And it's the local councillor. If the local councillor starts to feel the pain of what ordinary people are going through, then I think that's okay. But the problem could be that people start protesting. I don't know if you saw this protest in Chitale near Vuani in Limpopo, where people have torched the school, I think a post office, and they're protesting because they want the road, which I think is absolutely stupid to burn down a school because you want the road. It's called cutting off your nose to spite your face. But anyway, the point is, if people protest, I hope they protest against the municipality that's taking their money and not paying Eskom, and not against Eskom or the entire state. I think that is something where I'm looking forward to people making that distinction. Hopefully these municipalities will wake up and start doing something and actually doing the right thing and paying Eskom. But I think it's an area where we could see some disturbance in our politics.
All right. Now, there are other things on the agenda that we're not going to have time for, but I did think that tomorrow is really Barack Obama's last day as president. I was talking to Pumi Mashiko yesterday, who was saying to me, her son, Kanejo, has only ever known one president of the United States. He's 7 or 8 years old.
Mm.
He's only ever known Barack Obama. He doesn't know another president. And when you think of it that way, you know, he has been, for the last 8 years... And for those of us who have a longer memory and who perhaps read a bit of history every now and then, it does get a little more complicated. But for this guy to have been in office for 8 years and to have done the things that he has done in spite of a Congress that's really not helped him at any step of the way, he has this powerhouse of a wife. He's had some very, very interesting things happen, some interesting things not happen as president. People are busy now doing the appraisal of his presidency, putting together the pros and the cons, talking about Guantanamo Bay still being open, talking about drones still dropping bombs on people. But essentially, in most people's opinions, even in America, he leaves on very high approval ratings.
You know, for me, one of the things... my obsession with South Africa is the fact that there are 8.9, 9 million people who don't have jobs today. So this morning I got up and I came here, the four of us in the studio. We got up, whether you guys at the ungodly 4 a.m. But we all came here with a purpose. We do some work, we go on, we do other things and so forth and so forth. When Barack Obama came into office in 2008, was it? Unemployment in the United States stood at just over 10%. It's now at 4.3%.
Mm-hmm.
So he's more than halved the number of people who are out on the street. Now, there's all kinds of issues about jobs and so forth. But if we could take our unemployment number from 27%, if Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma could take the unemployment number in South Africa from 27% to half of that, even to just get to 15%, I tell you, it would mean that 4 million people who didn't have a job are in a job. And if you're in a job, you start looking forward to the end of the month, which a lot of people are looking forward to, particularly in January. But you start having a horizon that's way better than what so many of our compatriots are going through. So for me, Barack Obama has been, and it must be fascinating for that kid at year eight. I mean, I've never thought of it that way. My one daughter is 10. Barack Obama is a big favorite of hers. She thinks, wow, you know, and Michelle, as you say, is, it's like, this is my hero. So I think that unemployment number, the fact that he's been such a compelling moral and ethical compass in the world, has been a powerful thing. And I think many of us will also miss the beauty of those speeches.
Oh, yeah. Certainly one of the greatest living orators of all time.
Without a shadow of doubt. I mean, it's just incredible what he can do with words, even a press conference like what he did last night.
And such elegance and deftness. And the man just seemed to move from being a little bit self-effacing and at the same time extremely dignified, to having a sense of humor about himself and the office, to giving access that's never been given before.
But also the idea of thoughtfulness. I think we live in a world where, whether it's the proponents of paid Twitter just going at all of us and we don't stop and think more. Someone was telling me about how the fastness of our world has led to us not stopping and reflecting a little bit more. And I found it interesting, even in his answers to questions at his press conference last night, just how he stops to think about the question, to stop and think about what is the meaning of the two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? What is the meaning of the bombing of Aleppo or the invasion of the Ukraine or whatever? And so forth. We need more of that kind of leadership where it's not just off the cuff and I'll put Gareth down. There is real need for... At that level, you're talking about Davos and the World Economic Forum, for thoughtful leadership, and I think the world is crying out for that. With all his failures, and there are many, Barack Obama provided a bit of that in a world where we don't see much of it.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of the things that they are willing to credit him with. And you know, the American press are not friendly to any outgoing president. They want to show up all the faults before they can give any credit. And that's how humans are.
Yeah.
Biggest job growth, as you've already mentioned, in manufacturing in particular, since the 90s. Mm. American auto industry breaking sales records despite being in the biggest slump of all time when he took over. Clean energy production doubled. Mm. Unemployment cut in half. The deficit cut by three quarters, something the Republicans hate acknowledging. Mm. And the stock market tripled under his administration.
Yeah.
Some of this is directly attributable to his administration. Some of it is circumstantial. But the guy has he set a new standard for thoughtful and dignified leadership. Mm. And I think that we will miss him when he's gone.
Oh, no, we'll definitely miss him.
But we'll be able to follow the next president on his Twitter timeline.
I think the next president is going to be very exciting. You know what?
I think so too. I think we're going to be very entertained. Very entertained.
let me, you know, for me, one of the things that we do, what have we been doing And for our listeners, perhaps this is an interesting thing to reflect on. But what are we doing when we sit down here and chat? And we, you know, we like laughs, we have laughs and so forth. But we're trying to make sense of the world in many ways. We're trying to say, this is predictable, that's not predictable. This is what we can do, this is what we can achieve. And I'm interested in what can we predict about the state of the world? What can we, if we missed Brexit, if we missed the election of Donald Trump, what were the signs we were not reading? So mm-hmm. what are the signs we're not reading about the rise of Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma?
Or who are we paying attention to that we should stop paying attention to? Exactly. And who should we start paying attention to that we're ignoring?
Absolutely. So that you know, throughout the laughs and the gags that we all have, and we laugh at ourselves and at other people, it's sifting through that and saying, how predictable is my world and what will it look like in 2017 and December 2018. Mm. So that when someone like, say, someone like Andrea comes to the studio in the morning and says, oh, you know, the financial markets are like this and maybe we should buy or not buy bonds or equities or whatever, we have an idea of where this world is going in 2-3 years, and that's why we can invest in such and such a way. Sorry, Anthea. So I think one of the things about the Trump presidency is how predictable are things. So if we sit here and put that and say, what will our world look like under a Trump presidency in December 2017 and December 2018. And I think we're entering a period where it's going to be a huge challenge for us sitting in the studio every Thursday morning to say, well, that's what it's going to look like in a year.
Well, that's why we have you, Justice. And next Thursday, we will unwrap more of this and try to figure our way through it. But that's exactly what we are doing on the Burning Platform, trying to make sense of the madness.
Can we make a date? I mean, I know that it's January and you guys don't want to go out and stuff.
We've still got a couple of bets that we have hanging in the air. Someone's written those down.
I can't remember. Yeah. I can't remember.
So what is this date for?
I'd like to have a date to talk about the Public Protector's report into APSA and Bancorp.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's political, it's financial, it has huge implications for the Office of the Public Protector, for South Africa, and the idea of apartheid looting of the fiscus, about reparations and so forth and so forth. It also has, I think, huge implications for the national conversation. Are we having a conversation about that, or is this about the Guptas and the fact that we're having a debate about state capture, and suddenly we're told that, oh, no, the state was captured in the 90s, in the 80s, and so forth. And I think there's so many bits and pieces. And then the quality of the report itself. I was interested in an article by Hilary Joffe in the Business Day yesterday, who said, well, there's a fundamental problem when you're writing a report about borrowing and lending, but you don't
use the right terminology.
You don't use the right terminology. You can't differentiate between borrowing and lending.
This is the first report Busisiwe Mgwebane has put out as public protector.
Yes, essentially. Although the investigation started under Thulima Donsela, and a large part of the, in fact, of the interviews, for example, with Christals, was done with her still there. So the compilation of the report was under Busisiwe Mgwebane. The manner of the release of the report or the non-release of the report is also weird. Mm. The person who actually made, I know many people think, oh, Andile Mkhitama made the complaint, and he claims to have been responsible for
this.
It wasn't him. It was Paul Hoffman. Now, Paul Hoffman wasn't even given sight of this interim report, and yet other people got it. And so there's all kinds of shenanigans going on. But I think it's an interesting topic to get our teeth into.
So many things to talk about, Justice. Thank you very much. The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's, every Thursday with Justice Malala. If you missed any of that, you can download the podcast and listen to it at your leisure, in your car, at the gym, on your way to work, on your way to school, on your way to changing the world.
in bed having your Nando's.
Sure. Well, if that's what you do, I don't want to know what you're doing with those chicken bones. What a messy place to eat chicken. But there we go. Thank you, Justice. We'll see you on
Absolute
Thursday next
pleasure,
week.
Guys.
All right, cheers. Justice Malala, everybody. CliffCentral.com.